And welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Throneberry, and I'm here to introduce today's program for Veterans Day. We want to make sure that you all had an excellent Veterans Day. David Shulkin, who was the Secretary of the VA at the beginning of the Trump administration. And we've also got Chris Edmonds, who's going to be telling a story of his father, who was a POW during World War II. Really two great stories that I think you'll find very interesting and very helpful to you. I wanted to make sure that you are aware that the drawing is coming up on the 24th of November for that U.S. Wings leather flight jacket from the Top Gun 2 movie. This is an incredible leather flight jacket. It is worth somewhere between $700 and $800. But in order for you to have an opportunity to win this, you need to go to the Veterans Radio website and click on the picture of the jacket and register for it. And we will be announcing this, as I said before, on Sunday, November 24th, during our program between 5 and 6 p.m. Eastern Time. So make sure that you register. You can't win if you don't register. The other thing is that we are going into a little fundraising phase, I guess you could say, and we're asking that we need your support. For next year, we'd like to figure out what we're going to try and do next year. We're going into our 16th year, for those of you that have been listeners for those full 16 years. We're going into the starting our new fiscal year, I guess you could say, in January, and we're trying to figure out what our budget is going to look like. So we're asking that you go into our website and either click on the donate button or you click on the buddy support picture that's on there to help us out. We think it's important that we get our listener input and support. So if you'd like to help us out, we'd greatly appreciate it. If you've got any ideas for stories or music or an event from anywhere in the country, please send it to us. Go to our website, click on the Contact Us, and we will get that and respond to you. And hopefully we can get your event announced on our program. So I want you to sit back right now and relax and enjoy Jim Falzone and his story. And we will see you next week.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Falzone. Glad you can join us. I'm the officer of the deck today, Lieutenant JG type. We have a very interesting show, I think. You're going to hear from former Secretary of the VA, David Shulkin, on VA benefits and health care. We'll also be talking to Chris Edmonds, who wrote a book about his father called No Surrender. It's the Rhodey Edmonds story, and really his time as a POW in Nazi Germany. It's very fascinating. He saved many Americans in those camps, and at one point had to confront the Nazi concentration camp commandant by saying, "We are all Jews." And he would not separate out the Jewish members of the camp from the others. Obviously, if he had, all of those 200 men would have been killed. So it's a very fascinating story of courage and why we need to support our veterans because of what they've done to support us. But before we get started, we certainly want to thank our sponsors. Let's start with U.S. Wings, which is a provider of fine leather coats and paraphernalia, bomber jackets. You can find them at uswings.com. We want to thank the VFW Graf O'Hara VFW Post 423, American Legion Post 46, and the Vietnam Veterans of America chapter, the Charles S. Kettles chapter 310, all of Ann Arbor, Michigan, which helps support the work that we do at Veterans Radio. And Legal Help for Veterans, a veterans disability law firm, 800-693-4800, which again supports the work of Veterans Radio. And you too can support the work of Veterans Radio by going on the website veteransradio.net and hitting the sponsor button up top and being an individual sponsor and help us out. Take some effort to keep this radio's program on the air, as well as our podcasting that we do and being out in the community. So any support, level of support is greatly appreciated and put to excellent use. So let us turn to our first interview with VA Secretary David Shulkin. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Dr. David Shulkin. Dr. Shulkin was the 9th Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and we are thrilled to have you on the program to talk about a number of issues, including your new book that's out, It Shouldn't Be This Hard to Serve Your Country, Our Broken Government and the Plight of Veterans. Dr. Shulkin, welcome to Veterans Radio.
I'm glad to be here, Jim.
Well, the book's a fascinating read. I'm going to summarize this for folks. Most of our listeners on Veterans Radio know who you are as the Secretary of the VA, that you spent time both as the Undersecretary of Veterans Affairs for Health under the Obama administration, and then were approved by Congress 100-0 in the Senate confirmation to be President Trump's Secretary of the VA. And you held that position till March of 2018, when President Trump, in his inevitable style, announced that you had been terminated by Twitter. And the book, I want to recommend the book to everybody. It shouldn't be this hard to serve your country, because it's fascinating to get an inside look at the politics at that level of the game for the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. But, Mr. Secretary, what I'd like to spend some time on, because you're uniquely qualified to talk about this, are two broad areas, and we'll start with health care. You are an experienced health care management professional, and that's what you did in the private sector before you got drawn into the Washington, D.C. world. Give us your snapshot on the VA system as it provides health care, its pluses, its minuses, its strengths, its weaknesses, if you would.
First of all, I have spent most of my career running healthcare institutions in the private sector. And when I was asked in 2014 to consider coming to the VA, then by the Obama administration, I was entering during the time of the wait time crisis, when we were seeing really a horrible situation where veterans couldn't get access to the care they needed. And in Phoenix, there were allegations that up to 40 veterans were dying. And that was really one of the reasons why I wanted to go, to try to help this situation, which I think most of us as Americans who were sitting on the sideline were horrified by. And when I got to the VA, I wasn't sure whether I was going to find such a broken system that the best thing to do was just to recommend, let's close it up and get all these veterans out to the private hospitals where they can be helped. And so I joined the VA, and one of the first things I did, since I'm a physician, I put on my white coat and I started to see veterans, and I traveled around the country and, you know, took care of veterans and spoke to people. And I soon realized that what we're doing in the VA system is actually very different than what you find in the private sector. And in fact, it would be a terrible decision for veterans just to simply close the VA and voucher out our veterans, that the VA is there because it understands veterans, because it delivers services that aren't available in the private sector, and it really is doing tremendous things. And that isn't to say there aren't problems, because in a system this big, the largest healthcare system in the country, there are going to be problems. And we're going to need to work to make the system better, but it's a system that I believe is worth saving.
Well, as you say, it's a unique system, because not just the population it serves, but because of the problems that population have, some of the disease processes that you just don't see in the civilian world. Maybe you can speak to some of that for us.
Yeah. You know, the VA, for what it does, it provides services that aren't always available in the private sector. And so some of those are ones that won't surprise people: traumatic brain injury, the care of post-traumatic stress, prosthetics, orthotics, rehabilitation programs, the exposures to toxic chemicals. But its system of behavioral health care and primary health care, done at such a comprehensive level, just is not readily available in many communities across America. And these systems are really developed because they understand the needs of veterans and are applying their services in an environment that makes veterans feel welcome and comfortable.
One of the things that's mentioned in different passages of your book, It Shouldn't Be This Hard to Serve Your Country, Secretary Shulkin, is about the research that's done by the VA that I don't think gets enough attention. When you went into the system from the private sector, were you surprised at the level of research that's done by the VA?
I was, and this research is all dedicated to helping improve the lives of veterans, and it's doing some really tremendous work today, doing work in suicide and substance abuse and in delivering and improving the health of conditions that affect veterans all over. But what I think most Americans don't understand is that while this research helps veterans, it has impacted the lives and continues to impact the lives of every American. So the first liver transplant was done in a VA medical center. The hemodialysis machine for renal failure, the cardiac defibrillator that saves thousands of people's lives, the nicotine patch for smoking cessation, the association that if you take an aspirin a day that it may prevent heart attack. These are all things that were found using VA research, and including things like the CAT scanner. The original research for the CAT scanner was done at the VA. So this continues to be a way to improve the lives of all Americans.
One of those other research areas that I didn't realize existed until I was reading the book is VA has a brain bank. And I can't pronounce what CTE stands for, but I, you know, everybody who's a sports nut kind of knows that that's a big problem for football players and others. Tell us a little bit about that unique aspect of VA research.
Well, it was a VA researcher, Dr. McKee, who works in our Boston VA Medical Center, who actually discovered that what happens when veterans undergo head trauma, like with what we've seen in our recent conflicts with traumatic brain injury, the brain actually changes in something called chronic traumatic encephalopathy. You can see those changes under a microscope pathologically. What she has found is that this type of change that we see with veterans who undergo head injury is actually the same change that happens in football players who are knocking their heads. And this leads to premature dementia, or, you know, lack of, it sort of looks like an Alzheimer's type of condition. And so now that we can identify this and know that this is happening, we can start to think about ways to prevent it and ways to treat the condition. And so Dr. McKee has the largest physical collection of brains in the world to help this research. And so veterans and football players that can sign a pledge that when they pass, that they want their brain donated to the brain bank at the VA so that we can continue to learn and find new ways to prevent this terrible disease.
Another area that I think many people, and again, when you read the book and understand more about VA, you don't realize in the healthcare area how much training VA does, VA healthcare hospitals, medical centers do. And again, that spills out to the whole community well past veterans, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is one of the areas that I often shake my head at when I hear people saying we don't need a VA system, because I'm not sure they understand the reliance that the rest of the country has on training so many healthcare professionals. It's said that up to 70% of all doctors who graduate from U.S. medical schools will spend part of their training at a VA medical center. I know as a physician, I trained at 3 VA medical centers during my career. But VA is also the largest educator of nurses, of psychologists, of social workers, of pharmacists in the country. And so these trainees get great training and then go out. Hopefully some of them stay in the VA system, but the majority of them go out and work in hospitals and communities all throughout the country.
So here's the hard question, Dr. Shulkin, as the former Secretary of Veterans Affairs, as you look at the healthcare system, what are the top three problems that still need to be addressed to make the system better than it is today?
Clearly, the top priority that I identified and the VA has continued to identify as a top priority is veteran suicide. With 20 veterans a day taking their life That's a horrific number, and it really shows that we need to be doing much, much more to begin to address that. And when you address this issue, you have to look at some of the underlying issues of depression, post-traumatic stress, substance abuse, chronic pain. And so this whole area of brain health is really an area that we need much more research and effort focused on to be able to solve things. I also think that one of the areas that we learned a lot in VA and we need to continue to focus on is that a person's health is not just their physical condition, but it is related to their environment around them. So when you try to really improve a person's life, you have to look at their medical condition, but you also have to look at their socioeconomic condition, their psychological condition, their spiritual issues, and look at a person holistically. And we need to continue to focus on that, ending veteran homelessness, making sure that people can afford the medications that we give them, that they have transportation to and from their visits. And I think the VA is doing a good job of that and needs to continue to focus on that. And then the third area I would pick would be this new burgeoning area of personalized medicine. This is where we match a person's treatment to what their DNA tells us is individualized about that person's genetic makeup. And that will help us target better treatments to what works for an individual. And as we begin to get more sophisticated and spread this program out through the VA, I think that we will begin to have a bigger impact on helping more people.
That's a fascinating issue. I wish we had 30 minutes just to talk about that, and maybe someday you'll be willing to come back and do that.
Sure.
I want to move to the other big area that I mentioned. VA obviously has this huge role in veteran health care, but it also has a significant role for a lot of veterans relative to benefits, disability benefits. And you were working in the areas of reforming some of that and dealing with presumptions. So, again, this is a unique opportunity for us to hear from the Secretary of the VA about your thoughts on the benefits system, which, again, when you transitioned from the private side to the public side, this had to be new, so you were able to look at it with fresh eyes. Would you mind talking about your views on VA's disability benefit programs?
Yeah, benefits program, which is to provide people with disability benefits and other benefits that they earned as a result of their service, I think is the area that may need even the most reform in VA. And having come in as a healthcare professional and not necessarily a person who understood this benefits area, I had a lot of education and learning to do to bring myself up to speed. And I have to say that I believe we currently have our system backwards, where too many veterans are fighting the VA for the benefits that they deserve, and it's an adversarial relationship. And I believe what we need to do is to flip that around, that the VA should be there advocating and helping our veterans instead of having to put them through endless bureaucratic loopholes of trying to fight and prove for their services. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, we still have Vietnam veterans that in the thousands are still today fighting to get the benefits that they deserve through exposure to Agent Orange. And that's something that, frankly, is just not fulfilling our responsibility as a country to those veterans. And then we see this being repeated in our Gulf War veterans with the burn pits and the Gulf War illness, the veterans having to fight for the benefits they deserve. And I just think there's a better way of doing this. And I had started to work on a plan that would reform this program and had called in all the other previous secretaries of the VA who were kind enough to come in, who I knew had thought and worked on this issue, so that we together could begin to start putting forth a program to reform this. And unfortunately, then my tenure got cut short and I wasn't able to see those efforts really be fulfilled. But I continue to hear directly from so many veterans who are still fighting for these benefits, and I'll continue to advocate for them, and hopefully in a positive way contribute to us finding a better solution for dealing with this.
It's so important to hear from somebody at who has served as the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Dr. Shulkin, that the concerns of those veterans, and let's talk specifically about Blue Water Navy veterans who have been really, I think, treated horribly on this Agent Orange exposure, and you were the book, anybody who's interested in this issue should will really get a lot out of the book, because it shows the insight in the all the moving around and what OMB does to kill good ideas. But to hear that you say that there needs to be reform and those veterans shouldn't have to be fighting over those issues, and if you're one of the new guys out of Afghanistan, as we look at burn pits, I'm afraid we're going to do to our veterans with burn pit exposure what we did to them on Agent Orange. And I got a sense from reading it shouldn't be this hard to serve your country. You have similar concerns.
Oh, I think we're seeing a repeat exactly of that situation. And the policy is the same, which is that we put the burden of proof on the veteran. And while that burden of proof of either the scientific evidence or the documentation of where they serve gets, you know, just continues to be debated, the veteran has to wait. And, you know, these veterans are waiting so long that unfortunately many of them are dying off and not ever seeing their country honor their obligation to them. And, you know, one of the issues I dealt with when I was secretary were World War II veterans. You know, these men, mostly men in their 90s, who claim that they were involved in programs where they were being tested and exposed to agents like mustard gas to make sure that we understood what we'd be facing when we went into Europe. But these programs were so secret that their records didn't exist, you know, in these top secret programs. And yet, because they didn't exist, we were making these veterans essentially wait and many of them die without ever the recognition of what they gave to this country. And I just, when I heard about this, I gave them all waivers. I said, this just isn't right. You know, I know they may not be able to prove it, but these are honorable people who have served, and I'm going to take them at their word rather than make them continue to, you know, not be allowed to be honored for the service that they gave. And so that's what I mean when I say we have this backwards, and I think we have to look at a better way of dealing with our veterans who come back and need our help.
So let me ask you the same question I did in the healthcare as we come to winding up here on the benefit side, and that is to ask, what are those top three issues then that you either started working on or you believe the department needs to be working on going forward?
Well, besides an overall review and reform of our system, I think the very specific issues that I'm focused on are the Agent Orange presumptives that have come out, where the National Academy of Science has looked at this scientifically, and I believe that the data needs to be acted upon. Secondly, the Blue Water Navy veterans that, of course, I think we've made tremendous progress, and then the VA put a stay on these claims. And I think it's time that that stay be lifted and these claims be processed. And then third would be the burn pit patients who are, 165,000, I think, are in the registry in the VA who all deserve to be dealt with in a fair and appropriate way.
We're talking to former Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Dr. David Shulkin. He was the 9th Secretary of the VA. His book is It Shouldn't Be This Hard to Serve Your Country, Our Broken Government and the Plight of Veterans. And the book is replete with proof that we have a broken government and that politics enters in too much into this area under the current scheme of things, and I would encourage people to read it for that aspect as well. But Dr. Shulkin, I have to say that my image of you, my understanding of who Dr. Shulkin was when you were Secretary of the VA, unfortunately never really captured the full canvas of your experiences and what you were trying to do. So I think this book is really helpful for all of us to sort of remember the person that gets talked about in the press or on the news really isn't the person, is it?
Well, you know, thank you for saying that. But this book, even though it really is a personal story and I describe what I and my family went through, this book really isn't about me, and I certainly don't want anybody to think that this is about, you know, people trying to understand what I went through or feel sorry for what I went through. This is really a book that I dedicate to veterans, and to me it's very important that this country do better in its service to veterans, the reason why I came to Washington in the first place. And the book's title, It Shouldn't Be This Hard to Serve Your Country, really has a double meaning. It's really meant that when people go off and sacrifice for their country and come back, and or in some cases don't get to come back, and they need the support of their country, it shouldn't be this hard. They shouldn't have to go through the hoops and the bureaucracy that they often do. And then secondly, the meaning of the title is that we need people who are willing to come and to serve either as career employees or as political appointees coming into government to make it better. And under the environment that we see today, and when you see the story that I went through, I worry whether people will continue to want to work in public service. And I worry about the environment that we have, because if we don't have the best and brightest coming, all of us are going to suffer, because we rely upon that in our government for private citizens who have experience and knowledge to come and to help make this a better place for our citizens. So I really do hope that this book is seen constructively in an effort to try to improve the system that we have.
And do I take it, Dr. Shulkin, that you intend to continue to be an advocate for veteran matters, healthcare matters, now that you're back out into the private sector?
I think once you have a chance to meet the men and women and their families that have volunteered or sacrificed so much, that it really is something that sticks with you for life. And I've said that I will remain committed to doing whatever I can to advocate for our veterans. And I believe it's an essential part of our national security system, that our system just doesn't work unless you treat these people well in the way that they are deserve to be treated. It's all part of a tightly integrated system. So I will remain committed to doing whatever I can to help them.
Dr. Shulkin, thank you for spending some time today with Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Where else other than on Veterans Radio are you going to hear this kind of discussion from somebody like that, who's been at the top of the VA? So that's why you listen and come back every week. We really appreciate it. Stick around. We're going to have a fascinating story out of World War II about the heroics of one man in a Nazi POW camp that saved thousands. Come back to Veterans Radio.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Welcome back to Veterans Radio. We have got a great second program for you. It's an interview with Chris Edmonds, who wrote a book about his father, Rhodey Edmonds. After his dad passed, he dug into his father's actions in World War II to learn about his status as a World War II prisoner of war under Nazi Germany. It's one of those things that will surprise you and not surprise you. It will, you've probably never heard this story before, but when you do, you're going to be really bolstered by the American spirit that's shown in this man's life. President Barack Obama said, and this is a quote, "Faced with the choice of giving up his fellow soldiers or saving his own life, Rhodey looked evil in the eye and dared a Nazi to shoot. His moral compass never wavered. He was true to his faith, and he saved some 200 Jewish American soldiers as a consequence. I cannot imagine a greater expression of Christianity than to say, I too am a Jew." Close quote. Fascinating story. Stick around. You're really going to enjoy it. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today, Chris Edmonds. Chris, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. It's a joy to be with you today.
Well, we're going to get to talk about your father.
Yeah, Roderick, and his nickname, I guess, or part of his name was Roddy. We called him, of course, I called him Dad, but most everybody called him Roddy.
Well, Roddy Edmonds had a very important career in the military in World War II, and we want to talk a little bit about that because you went on a journey to find out sort of what Dad did in World War II, prompted by your daughters. And I should say that Chris Edmonds is a pastor and grew up in eastern Tennessee, as did his father. But Chris, let's start with where Roddy, sort of how he got into the military and how he found himself preparing for in the middle of World War II.
Yes, sir. He grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, and really that's a city in East Tennessee, just near the Smoky Mountains. He loved the Smoky Mountains. But he grew up what I would consider relatively poor. His father was a professional paper hanger, but at age three, his mom passed away in really trying to have another little baby. And dad basically grew up from the age of three without a mom. And then he, at the age of 10, the depression hit. And so I say dad, to most folks, I'll just say dad didn't have much stuff growing up, but he had the right stuff.
He finds himself at the Battle of the Bulge in the Battle of the Hurtgen Forest, which you and your co-author, Douglas Century, do a fabulous job of painting the battle picture that's going on and the thicket of this forest that they're fighting in. It's really great history, Chris, that you've put into the book, No Surrender, A Father, A Son, and an Extraordinary Act of Heroism that continues to live on to today. But that battle ultimately results in his capture. Tell us about that.
Yeah. They settled in, and that was the launching of the Battle of the Bulge by the Nazis, and Hitler's plan to march to Antwerp in a Blitzkrieg style was impeded when he ran into men like Dad and others who served with him. And in the midst of that, Dad's men, the 422nd for sure, many of the 423rd, some of the 424th, regiments were completely surrounded. They fought valiantly for 3 days and eventually were captured. All of those men are more than heroes who served there. Now, some of those men had served in the Hurtgen Forest as well. Particularly the one, Paul Stern, one of the men there, he served as a medic in the 28th Division, and they fought all the way through. They helped liberate Paris, came all the way through and fought in the Hurtgen Forest. And Paul told me, he said, my first minutes on the battlefield, he said, I was changed forever. I was a change. He said, I was a boy and I became a man very quickly and I was changed forever.
Chris, you knew that your father was had been a POW, but as you did this research and found out what he and his men went through, getting to the POW camp, getting to Stalag 9A, tell us what surprised or shocked or jolted you as you did your research to find out what they actually were going through.
So looking at that diary and rereading it and watching my daughter's video that they made as a group just sparked me. And I said, I got to find out what happened because it seemed like more happened there than we know. And in his POW experience, after he went to the first camp, he and all the non-commissioned officers transferred to a second camp. In that first camp, Jewish men were segregated. Jewish American GIs, POWs, were segregated for the purposes of sending them to death camps. And so Dad saw his friends, particularly Lester Tanner, Tannenbaum at the time, be sent off to this prison within a prison in that first camp. Well, the second camp, all the non-coms are transferred into Ziegenhain, Stalag 9A. Along with Lester and all of Dad's Jewish buddies who were non-com officers were sent along with Dad. Well, Dad was the highest ranking American soldier in that camp, Stalag 9A. It was near the end of the war, like January 45. And so the Nazis, even there, their strict anti-Jew policies were in place, and their plans were to segregate the Jewish POWs from non-Jews and send them to certain death. Particularly, they were going to send them to Berga. So it was late the evening, January 26th, the German officers sent orders to my father and announced over the loudspeaker to the American forces that only the Jewish soldiers were to report outside for the next morning's roll call. Anyone who disobeyed that order would be shot. That was their order. So their order is very clear, very specific. And so without hesitation, according to testimony, Dad turned to the men in his barracks and said, "We're not doing that. Tomorrow we all fall out." And he sent orders to the other four barracks of American soldiers and ordered them to fall out just as usual. And that's what they did. It was bitterly cold that morning. As everyone knows, that winter was one of the worst winters on record in Germany. It was January 27th, 1945. And so as the Nazi commander approached, he couldn't believe his eyes. And this commander was not the commandant of the camp. This was a man from high command. But he couldn't believe his eyes because standing before him were all the Americans, and he knew that immediately. There were nearly 1,300 soldiers lined up in sharp formation, and some of these men had to be helped get out there because they were already 40 days into starvation at this point. And so the German major, Major Siegmann, stormed over to my father, and he got up in his face. He angrily said, "They cannot all be Jews," to which my father declared, "We are all Jews here." And the Nazi turned blood red. He could not believe this little American sergeant was disobeying his orders. No one had ever done that to him. And so he lunges forward, he presses. Go ahead.
And I want to stop and have Veteran Radio listeners reflect on what Chris Edmonds is telling us about his father's act here. Not only his own internal fortitude to resist, but the other roughly 1,300 men who came out at his direction to save, or hopefully save, about 200 Jewish American soldiers who were in the camp. Just think about what that took for all of those men. Your father's out front. He's got the Luger pressed against his forehead. But all of those men have to be worried about, am I going to be mowed down next?
Yeah. Well, I'm quick to say, point out that, you know, all these men are more than heroes, not just Dad. Obviously, Dad's leadership helped get to this moment of confrontation and resisting, you know, and defying the Nazi orders. But all those men were heroes because any one of those men could have refused to even come out. They could have just said, "I'm not going out there. That's not the order that the Germans have given us. I'm staying in my barracks." But they all came out. Then when the gun was produced, the threat occurred. Any one of those men could have started pointing out their Jewish fellow soldiers. None of them did.
I want to expedite this a little bit because we're going to run out of time, and I don't want to miss two more important facts, and that is, as the war comes to a close and the camp can tell that the American and Allied forces are advancing, the prospect of marching these, at this point, emaciated soldiers to deeper in to safer territory comes about. And the second act of defiance that your father pulls off, knowing full well, hey, I pressed my luck once and I got away with it. Can I do it again? Yeah. Tell us about this second act.
Yeah. Well, obviously, Dad's willful defiance of the major, Major Siegmann, turns into victory for the Americans because Dad refuses to turn over the Jewish men. He actually told the major, he said, "Major, you can shoot me, but you'll have to kill all of us because we know who you are, and you'll stand for war crimes when we win this war." And then he said, "And you will pay." And at that moment, the major made a choice. He decided not to shoot Dad, and he put his gun back in his holster. He turned and walked out of, back to his quarters, and then left the camp and never asked for the Jewish men again. So fast forward two more months later, the Americans are very close by getting ready to come and liberate the camp. And the Germans give the same, another similar order. And they said, "Tomorrow morning, everyone's going to fall out and be ready to leave the camp. We're going to march everybody out." So Dad again tells his men, "We're not doing that. We're going to refuse to go. We're going to defy their orders. We're going to," and he hatched a plan. And the plan was basically for the healthy guys to take care of the sick guys, take them back to the barracks, and just keep doing that. Fall out, then take them back to the barracks. Fall out, take them back to the barracks. Do that all day long. While they were doing that, and so they started working the plan that morning, they marched the Russian quadrant out, the British quadrant, and the French quadrant were all marched out. The Americans refused to go.
And fundamental in that is his recognition and the other men's recognition that many of them are so starved, these men won't survive a march.
No, they won't. They won't. And Dad said that to his leaders. He said, "We're too weak to go on this march. We don't know what's out there. Our best hope, our best chance is to stay in the camp." And said, "You know, the Germans are wanting to get out at, you know, bad. So we're staying, and whatever happens, happens." So they just made a choice. We're gonna die, or we're gonna live in this camp. That this is our stand. And much like they'd made earlier with protecting the Jewish men. So at the end of the day, toward dusk, the commandant of the camp came out, and it's Dad's. I found this in Dad's handwriting. About a year and a half ago, my mom had squirreled it away. There's three pages of three happenings that happened in the camp, and this was one of them he was telling. And in his own words, he said, the old German colonel came up to him, threw up his hands, and says, "Okay, you win. We're leaving. You can have the camp." And the Germans marched out and left the Americans alone. And Lester said he said it's the greatest escape in World War II, but we didn't go anywhere. We stayed in the camp.
And again, the odds of surviving in the winter in a forced march when they're so emaciated was, you know, the odds were small to survive. And that's why this story of Rhody Edmonds in No Surrender, it's put out or published by HarperCollins, Harper One, an imprint of HarperCollins publisher, is really worth reading. You're going to learn about not only his story, but the men who followed him. You're going to learn in reading this, Chris, I found really interesting the whole story of the Army Specialized Training Program that unfortunately we don't have a lot of time to talk about. I want to finish with one thing. Your father was named as Righteous Among the Nations by Yad Vashem in Israel, Israel's National Holocaust Memorial. He is one of five Americans. He's the only serviceman to have ever been so named. Correct. This high honor is incredible. Tell us just a little bit about what that meant to the family.
For us as a family, it was a surprise. We had no idea that they even had Dad's name and information. They spent over a year interviewing several of the key POWs who were a part of that experience and doing historical background search on that as well and verifying. And then when they announced in 2015, I got a phone call on June 6th of 2015, which was D-Day. Of 2015 about the award and the honor. It is a great, if not the greatest honor he will receive. I mean, to be honored along the those of like Schindler and Sugihara and others who have Sir Winton, who put their life on the line for Jewish brothers and sisters who were being murdered, brutally murdered and massacred by the Nazis. It's an incredible honor, particularly with Dad's faith. Dad's faith as a Christian.
It goes back to that early training we were talking about, that early upbringing, his moral center that he developed in that small rural town of eastern Tennessee that carried him through his short life, but through some incredibly heroic events. And for him to be honored for saying, you know, standing up to the Nazis and saying, we are all Jews, and saving everyone because of that, is really a great story. And I encourage people to go out and buy No Surrender by Chris Edmonds and Douglas Sentry.
It's fantastic, and it's touching lives across the world. Even President Obama at the Reichstag ceremony, you know, to have a President of the United States visit and speak at your father's ceremony was beyond, you know, our comprehension. And he basically said, you know, your father's moral compass never wavered. He said, you know, he looked the Nazi in the eyes and dared a Nazi to shoot. And he said, I don't know of a better expression of Christianity than to lay down your life for your friends. And he did what was right. Dad's moral compass was, I mean, right was right, even if everybody said it was wrong.
Exactly. Chris, tell us where, if people are interested in finding more about you or your dad or the work that you're doing in his name, how do they keep up to date on what's going on?
NoSurrenderBook.com has the all the information about the book. There's tons of pictures on there. There's book trailers. There's some really good information on there about the book and about the lives involved in the book. And then RoddyEdmonds.com. It's just RoddyEdmonds.com, and that's our website as well. You know, I'm doing a lot of speaking. If they're interested in having me come and talk about the book, talk about Dad's story, and the men. It really, Dad, this notebook, No Surrender, is about Dad, but it's about the other heroes who served with him. You know, Staff Sergeant Frankie Sorenzi of the 106th Infantry, Staff Sergeant Lester Tanner of the 106th, 422nd, Corporal Paul Stern of the 28th Division, Sonny Fox, Sergeant Erwin Sonny Fox, Erwin Fox of New York as well, and so many like them. You know, Hank Friedman, who lives down in Georgia, still alive and still full of patriotism and love for our country. And I mean, if his body would let him, he could still handle a rifle and still go fight for us. I mean, he's that spirited, and just men across the country. To me, it speaks to our need as a nation now. It's a book that you will cry when you read it. You will laugh. You will stand up and cheer, and you will believe. Surely you will believe we live in the greatest country on the planet, and it's because of our freedoms and because they've been secured by the men and women of our armed forces. And for that, we need to love them well and take care of them well.
Chris,
that's one of my missions as well, is just to love our veterans and our veterans in the past, our veterans now, all who are serving.
Chris, if you have a few more minutes, I would like to ask you about the Jewish men that you were able to go talk to who served with your father. And I also want to talk to you about how a number of them came out of the Army Specialized Training Program. So why don't we start there? Why don't we start with the Army Specialized Training Program? Because honestly, I've never really read about this before, the Quiz Kids. And some of those kids, if you will, ended up serving with your father and living through this experience. So tell us about ASTP.
Yeah, ASTP was an Army Specialized Training Program, and it was the bright. They took the brightest and the best of the Army, and they did test, you know, to determine who those people were, and they were attending college. They had colleges across the country where they would send these soldiers. Now the soldiers still, you know, did their normal Army service, you know, get up and do their calisthenics, and you know, they were in the regimen of the Army program, but they would also go and study alongside other students who weren't in the Army, particular subjects. And these men were going to be slotted for officer material. They would come out of this program and be officers. Well, in the midst of this program, after D-Day, there was such a need for infantrymen that they took the brightest and the best that the Army had to offer, these young men who were just, I mean, incredible. They called them quiz kids, you know, because they were so bright. And they slugged them back into the infantry. And then Dad received a bunch of these men as new recruits for him to train in and to hone into being fighting soldiers before they went over to the European theater.
Well, this was sort of an interesting idea by the Army to identify and train the best and the brightest. Give us some names of people who fit that caption that we might recognize.
Well, Carl Reiner was one. Mel Brooks was one. His name slips my mind. He was he's former Secretary of State.
I have the list in front of me includes Bob Dole, Kurt Vonnegut, Gore
Vidal.
Henry
Kissinger, and then the men who were with Dad, Paul Stern, Sidney Skip Friedman, Lester Tanner. Now, see, Lester and Skip are perfect examples. Both ended up after they survived this horrendous and horrible situation in POW camps. They came back to the States and finished their law degree. Lester graduated from Harvard in 1948, and he's been an incredible attorney in the New York area for years. He even had a landmark case. Back in the, I think it was in the 80s, on discrimination, he settled a landmark case. And Mr. Friedman, Skip Friedman, they call him Skipopedia because he's so bright, he could remember anything. A great historian, but he had a very successful career as an attorney. Both of these men worked, well, Skip passed away a couple of years ago, but he worked right up until the time you know, he passed away. He was semi-retired. And Lester is 90, he'll be 96 this year, and he's still working in New York. Though he's semi-retired, he's still got a few key clients.
Well, you wrote, and you wrote on this ASTP, and I want to quote this because I think this is where it just sort of the light bulb went off for me. You wrote, "The ASTP would leave a profound footprint on U.S. history and culture of the 20th century. It has been called a groundbreaking social experiment in merit-based advancement, one that helped to more fully democratize American society by selecting its trainees based on their inherent ability rather than on their family social economic status." End of quote. And that's what's so interesting. Some of the men you're talking about came out of, you know, humble backgrounds or maybe poor socioeconomic or ethnic Jewish backgrounds where they certainly didn't have a leg up in life.
I think our nation needs to honor our heroes, and we do a good job of that. But I think this is one unsung hero who hasn't been honored, and I would like to see that happen. If, just for nothing else is to encourage the young people in our nation to do what's right.
I couldn't agree with that more. Chris Edmonds, thanks for taking some time with Veterans Radio today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a joy.
I hope you found that as interesting as I did, and it certainly proves up that we are stronger as a country when we stand together, and that's what Rohde did when he said, "We are all Jews here today." And I also think the whole side story on the American Specialized Training Program at the ASTP was fascinating. You probably never heard that anywhere else either. So thank you for listening in on Veterans Radio today. And until next time, you are dismissed.